Hi everyone, and welcome back to Relationships Rock. Today we're talking about anxiety, understanding anxiety, and it's not necessarily related to Pesach, Passover, which is coming up, but maybe it is because we all feel a little bit anxious. The truth is that today's episode is going to be a little bit more like the narcissism episode, where I'm putting on my psychology professor hat, and I just kind of want to bring more information out there on what is anxiety and truly understanding it. I want to share with you guys two stories to illustrate the need to increase knowledge and understanding. I think that for the past few years, the Jewish community has done an amazing job of trying to decrease stigma of mental illness. And that's amazing and so important. But I think that in the process, they have also downplayed it, and that creates more confusion and I think more hurt for people who are in that situation. So many years ago, I was reading an article on like one of the popular Jewish magazines, and it was about a girl who was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. So the article was how she was diagnosed, I think, at 16 or 17, and then she went to a doctor, she got medication, and ta-da, she was completely fine. Bipolar was not a big deal, and she's totally okay. And I read this, and I was just like, is this story even real? Because that's not how bipolar works. Sometimes people who are diagnosed with bipolar, it could take years just to get to the right medication. Some medication, like lithium, which is used, could be very deadly in big amounts. So they have to go with very small amounts. And there's a lot of side effects, which tend to make people not want to take it. Also, it's really a journey. They need a lot of support. The mania aspect of bipolar could be very addicting, and they want to kind of go back on it. I'm sorry if I'm like mumbling and you're like, what is she even talking about? Maybe one time I'll discuss something like bipolar more in detail. But the point was that I was reading this and I was like, this is not the truth. This is not how bipolar works. This is not how getting diagnosed and getting help works. And by downplaying it, they're actually making it that the people who are suffering with it feel guilty or perhaps misunderstood. And the people who are married to somebody who has that, either will feel tricked if they were told it's not a big deal, don't worry about it. Or they feel like, wow, am I the only person who is in this crazy amount of pain and struggling with this? And I felt at the moment that it would be better if instead of the magazines writing these like, happily ever after stories with mental illness, they would just have this like educational piece. By the way, if any Jewish magazine is listening, please go with this. Where they would say, oh, let's discuss anxiety, or let's discuss bipolar. And then, having different excerpts of like the wife of somebody who has bipolar, somebody who has bipolar, a psychologist, what are the pros? What are the cons? What are the difficulties? What realistically are you gotta be signing up for, much more of like an education piece so that somebody can go ahead and read it and make their own decision instead of it being downplayed. And another story that kind of sparked the interest of doing like an educational podcast episode on anxiety, one of which I'm just starting with anxiety because I feel like it's the most common, but I would love to do on, more on different mental illnesses, is a few years ago, a shadchan called me. And she basically had set up a couple and they were about to get engaged. And the girl revealed that she was taking anxiety medication. So, or I think it was anxiety or depression. I don't remember which one it was. So the guy spoke to his Rebbe and the guy ended up telling the shadchan, I'm going to break it off because I heard one of the side effects is that it could impact intimacy. And I don't want to sign up for that. I don't think this is for me. So the shadchan calls me all upset, like, can you believe this? This guy heard this lie about it affecting intimacy and it's not true. And he's going to end like a perfectly good shidduch. I know a ton of people who have anxiety and are on medication or depression and they're totally fine and they live normal lives. Like this guy's just trying to destroy, a perfectly good shidduch. So I actually said to her, there are side effects to every medication. And one of the most common side effects, which side point we're going to discuss in depth in this episode, is that it does impact intimacy or it could impact intimacy. So he's not wrong in that. And it is a big deal for him or for anyone to make a decision to marry someone, knowing certain side effects, knowing what it could be. And I don't think you should, shame him for that. And she was completely in shock. She had no idea that any of these medications had side effects. It was almost like this mentality, which is so similar to that, Jewish magazine mentality, which is the moment you take medication, everything is cured. There's nothing to worry about. People are making a bigger deal than it is. Now, I'm not trying to say that people who have struggles are monsters and that, they should never get married. Chas v'shalom. It's not like that. For every person, their journey is completely different. For some people, a certain medication might have side effects and another one may not. I have no idea. We can't predict. But we also don't have to pretend that it's not a big deal because for some people, it may be. And for some people, it may not be, right? If someone says no to you because of something you're struggling with, it's not because you're bad, but it's because they just can't be the right partner for you and the right support system that you need. And this is something actually that I encourage people to discuss, when someone is revealing like a mental illness, a medication. And, I one of the questions I have them ask each other is, can I be the right partner for you? What would that support system look like? What would you need from me to be your support system? And if somebody says, look, I think you're amazing, but I just can't give you what you need. I can't be the person who holds your hands in this journey of life with the struggle. They're doing you a favor, though it's very painful to hear, because they're not the right partner that you need. So with that introduction, let's understand anxiety. So first, we have to understand the difference between the colloquial use of anxiety and the clinical use. Okay, and I just want to put a side point here. It's very important that when you're expressing yourself and you're communicating with somebody, that you don't make it sound worse than it is. We all use an expression like, oh, I feel anxious, but that's very different than diagnosing yourself as someone who has anxiety, because not everyone, unfortunately, asks follow-up questions. So if you say like, yeah, like I'm so anxious all the time, they may just make assumptions and be like, oh, she has anxiety, so it's very important that even though we use the term colloquially, when you're on a date, avoid using these terms like, oh, I felt so depressed, or in high school, I was so depressed, without context. Now, if you actually did struggle with depression and you want to reveal that, by all means, and I actually have a whole episode on how to reveal different things with mental illness and just illness in general and what kind of questions to ask and so forth. So you can go ahead and check that out. So let's do some statistics about anxiety. So anxiety disorders are actually the most common mental health conditions in the US. They affect about 40 million Americans. That's why I wanted to start with it, because it's the most common. And because it's the most common, I think it's the most downplayed in many ways, because everyone says, oh, everyone has anxiety. Like, it's fine, it's not a big deal. Now, it is normal to have anxiety, right? Like, we all have that feeling. You may feel anxious or nervous if you have like a problem at work or with your partner, or if you have to get a test or make an important decision or go for a job interview. And anxiety can actually be very beneficial for you, right? Like, anxiety can help you notice if you're in a dangerous situation, or it can focus your attention so you could stay safe, or it can make sure that you go over everything to make sure you have all your paperwork when you're traveling overseas. But an anxiety disorder goes beyond, that regular nervousness and slight fear that you might feel, right, from time to time. An anxiety disorder is when, one, anxiety interferes with your ability to function. This is really important. The moment that it becomes a problem and it doesn't allow you to function normally, it's taken away from your quality of life. And it's affecting your life and your ability to function. That's when it's, a real anxiety disorder. Now, of course, I am not diagnosing anyone. I am trying to just, educate. So if you feel like you have anxiety, by all means, listen to this, but then, of course, get the appropriate help. Number two is when you often overreact when something triggers your emotions. Now, yes, we all have anxiety, we all have fears, but anxiety makes, and a real anxiety disorder makes that you feel everything like tenfold. So something that somebody else might say, okay, fine, wow, that's stressful, but like I'll figure out how to deal with it. It's like all of a sudden, panic mode, and it's very, very difficult to manage. And number three is you might feel like sometimes you can't control your responses to situations. Anxiety disorders can make it difficult to get through the day. Now, There are several effective treatments, which we're going to discuss. Now, what causes anxiety disorders? For the main part, there's three causes. The first one is a chemical imbalance. Now, when we're talking about a chemical imbalance, we're actually talking about neuroscience, which those of you that know me know that I studied neuroscience at Columbia University. It's one of my master's. And I happen to be, I love neuroscience, specifically looking at how the brain during things, is functioning. So the way your brain works is that it communicates through something called neurotransmitters, which are, chemicals that kind of bounce from one neuron to the other, to make it in very simple lay terms. Now, it's such so amazing. I remember I had a professor at Columbia who was brilliant, 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 really like so brilliant. And I remember she would always make comments like, "Oh, those crazy people who believe in God," and she'd always downplay believing in God. And to me, it was like the more that I would learn about neuroscience and the intricacy and how the brain worked, it was more like it was literally like awe, like just awe of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, like how everything is so detailed and so perfectly balanced. And all of these chemicals, aside from controlling and managing the just the way that your brain works and keeping everything healthy and so forth, it also controls your mood. And when you experience stress for a long period of time, that can sometimes lead to a chemical imbalance because your body's always trying to keep itself balanced, right? So if you start producing too much of one neurotransmitter, for example, like serotonin, so then your brain kind of overcompensates. Serotonin is probably the neurotransmitter that is the most impacted by, when it comes to anxiety, when your body is either making too much or too little and is trying to overcompensate. And that's why when people take medication, oftentimes their SSRIs, which are serotonin, it's one way to kind of increase serotonin in your brain. And there's different ways to do it. It's funny, in my head, I see like the neuron like so clearly. So I'm just talking as if it's like so obvious, but basically neurons, when they quote unquote fire, they release neurotransmitters into the other neuron. Now, what can sometimes happen is that either there's not enough receptors on the other side of the neuron, or you don't have a ton of serotonin coming out. So one thing they do, the SSRIs, is that they make it that it gets blocked from re-entering the previous neuron, right? It kind of shoots off, touches the other neuron, comes back in. So it kind of closes that. So they stay in that synapse gap. And therefore it keeps activating the neuron to kind of, do more of the serotonin. So that's one cause would be a chemical imbalance. The second thing is environmental factors. Now, usually when someone experiences like a really big trauma, and trauma is a term that can mean a lot of things for different people, that could trigger an anxiety disorder, especially in somebody who already has the genetic predisposition. They've already inherited kind of that sequence, in their body, in their brain, to be more predisposed to it. And number three is it's hereditary. Anxiety disorders, like most mental illnesses, tend to run in families. You may inherit it from one or both parents, like eye color. With genetics, actually interesting because part of it could be nature, part of it could be nurture. Meaning, if you grew up with a very anxious mother, you might be more anxious, but is it because you grew up seeing that? So you think that's normal or that's how you've learned to handle things? Or is it because of genetics? Either way, those would be the three causes of an anxiety disorder: chemical imbalance, environmental factor, like something big happening, and genetics. Now, the main way that anxiety is treated is through medication. I happen to believe that medication really should be used alongside therapy. And the goal is always to get the person off medication, unless it's something like, let's say, bipolar or schizophrenia, which for the most part, there will be a medication for their whole life. It's much, much harder to get off of it. I once heard this mashal from a psychology professor. He said, if someone is drowning, you can't teach them how to swim. You can't say to them, okay, listen how you swim, they're drowning. You first have to help them to float. And the goal of medication is to help somebody to float. And then they can learn how to swim, right? Whether it is with therapy or with other anxiety coping mechanisms, right? And again, there are cases where medication is needed long term, right? Like bipolar and schizophrenia, and sometimes even OCD, which is a form of anxiety. But for the most part, the goal is to kind of get them to float and then helping them learn how to swim. So one of the questions that I encourage people to ask is this long term? Is this short term? What else are you doing to learn how to cope and manage anxiety? Yes, medication does work for the most part, but you also want to ideally fix the problem, not just put a band-aid on it. As I mentioned, OCD, which is obsessive compulsive disorder, is a common anxiety disorder. It causes unreasonable thoughts, fears, or worries. A person with OCD tries to manage all these thoughts with rituals, right? So they have, that's why it's called obsessive compulsive disorder, because they have obsessions, these disturbing thoughts. They tend to be irrational and they cause a lot of anxiety. And the way that they relieve the anxiety is by doing the compulsions, right? So the rituals. And that's how they get it to stop or to ease. That's what, the typical example is somebody who locks the door 8 times or washes their hands 5 times, 6 times. And it's because they have this thought of anxiety of germs, 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 or whatever it is. And then the way that they alleviate the anxiety is by going ahead and doing the ritual. It's very important to note that, well, first of all, OCD people tend to use all the time colloquially. So again, be careful with that. Medications can't cure an anxiety disorder. Okay. There is no cure. It's just a way to improve symptoms and help you function better. And it's important to know that distinction because no one here is quote unquote cured by taking medication. It's not like the problem ceases to exist. The problem is still there underlining. And that's why I think it's so important that alongside the medication, there's therapy and there are coping mechanisms and just trying to learn how to manage the anxiety. And, sometimes people will get off medication with coping mechanisms, with a therapist, all being very structured. And then they realize, hey, this is too much for me. I can't do it. And they go back on medication. That's totally fine. Or sometimes they go off of it and they're able to kind of, deal with it. It really depends on the person. So there's different types of anxiety medication. So we're going to go over three. The first one is called anti-anxiety medication, usually called benzos. And what they do is they tend to decrease your anxiety, your panic, your worry. They work very quickly, but you can build the tolerance. A tolerance means that you're going to have to use more and more each time. So they become less effective over time. A lot of times when they are prescribed, they're just prescribed for short term, just to kind of give you that, because they work quickly, that boosts right in the beginning, and then they taper you off, and then they tend to then add an antidepressant to the mix, like Valium or Xanax. So an antidepressant is the second way that you can treat anxiety. Even though it is for depression, it also can help with anxiety disorders because it tweaks how your brain uses certain chemicals to improve mood and reduce stress. Antidepressants do take more time to work, so you have to be, patient. An example of that is serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs. And like I said, sometimes they are, even though they're antidepressants, they could be used, for anxiety, especially for OCD, something like Prozac. So, if someone tells you they're on medication, you ask which one, they tell you, oh, that they're on Prozac, and you're like, wait, I thought you said you have anxiety. Why are you taking antidepressant? It sometimes could be used for that. And the third would be beta blockers. So beta blockers are actually used for people with high blood pressure. But what it does is that it doesn't change the chemical balance. It basically works on just alleviating and reducing the physical symptoms of anxiety disorders. So, for example, they can relieve, rapid heartbeat, shaking, trembling. It really is for short term. Whenever it's prescribed, it's what's called off-label. Now, off-label means that, what it was approved for by the FDA was not for anxiety. It was approved for high blood pressure, but it's being, prescribed off-label, meaning because of its side effects, what it uses, you could then use it for anxiety. For example, propranolol and atenolol are two that are used often to help with anxiety, and they're just helping with the physical symptoms. If people tend to have panic attacks, this is usually something that they're prescribed or they can take because, again, it works quickly and it relieves the physical symptoms. So it can just help them kind of feel more calm for the moment. And then again, it has to be treated with either antidepressants or anti-anxiety and hopefully medication. So that was like a quick, again, information overload of anxiety and medication. And I want to discuss the side effects because this is, again, what's the most downplayed, and I think the most important to note when you're signing up to be a partner of somebody who is struggling with this. And a lot of times people don't realize this because, as we're going to see, one of these side effects doesn't really come up until you're married. So the first two things, let me just backtrack for a second. Anxiety is when somebody has, they're over alert. They're like way too up. So what anxiety medication does is it makes you more calm, right? It brings you down. It's a downer. So it can make you more sleepy and relaxed, right? Which is good because you want to kind of not feel things as strongly, right? I mentioned one of the symptoms or ways that it can come across anxiety is that, you can react in a way that's way too extreme for what actually happened. So it calms you down. When you calm down, right, your body can't just calm down for one thing. It just calms your entire body down. They're more relaxed. A lot of times people who are on very strong anxiety medication, or even just a little bit, depending on how your body reacts, may feel like their personality is much more monotone now, just because, again, it just kind of brings everything down. The main two side effects are that it can make you very sleepy, which you might say, hey, that's not such a big deal, but it is, when your expectation when you get married, the first year of marriage is, oh, we're going to go out all the time and be up late or hanging out or whatever. And 9 p.m. rolls around and the person is fast asleep. So that might be hard for the other partner. It may also be difficult if you expect your spouse, let's say you're marrying a guy, to go to shul, early in the morning and, because of the medication, it's very hard for him to wake up in the morning. And that might create, a lot of tension. Or it could be that his learning is a little bit off because, he's just so tired or work. So you have to kind of, again, it's not to be like, oh, that's a deal breaker, but just for the expectation to be correct. And the second one is, and it's very common with both antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication, and that is a lower libido. Libido is, basically, your sexual desire. So, a lot of times there could be sexual dysfunction as a side effect for anxiety medication because, again, it calms you down, it brings you down. And part of libido, right, is arousal, right? You are aroused. So, you have something, medication that's basically making you not aroused because anxiety is over arousal of everything else. So, it's kind of pushing that down. So much, it could play up in different ways. It could be that it makes it that you have less desire, right? Less arousal. It could be that it's very difficult, even once you're being, with your spouse to enjoy. That's probably the most common. It could even lead some cases to sexual dysfunction, especially with men. So those things, could play up. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There are solutions for both of those things. And as long as your expectation is realistic, it's fine. You can make it work. The problem is if you are a newlywed and you get married and you have a certain expectation of what that first year is going to look like in terms of spending time together, both in and outside of the bedroom. And then lo and behold, these are two big side effects that could play up and create a lot of confusion. And the other person might feel like, oh no, what am I doing wrong? Is it because of me? Am I not attracted? Do they not like me? And it's really not you, it's really the medication. So it's important to have really open communication. And like I said, there really are ways to fix this and there are ways to help with it, but it's just about the awareness that it could come up. So there are other side effects. Obviously, every medication has their own side effects and each person is going to respond differently. I just wanted to focus on the main two ones, but I don't want you to feel like I didn't mention something else, that it's not possible. It is possible. It really depends on how the person reacts to the medication, which medication, how long they're taking it for. Sometimes antidepressants taken for a very long time have other types of side effects and so forth. Now, I'm hesitant to kind of give natural ways to help with anxiety because I don't want anyone to be listening to this and say, oh my gosh, Raquel said medication is horrible. I never said that. I think that if you are drowning, if you're struggling, if you're not functioning normally, you should do whatever you have to do. You don't get bonus points for suffering extra in this world. Chas v'shalom. Sometimes, especially if it's because of like a short-term situation, God forbid the loss of some of a loved person or a really hard, difficult situation at home or a financial situation. Sometimes we all need that kind of like, let me put some floaters on, just to be able to float and not drown. And that's responsible, right? To get help is responsible. So that being said, there are ways that you could manage anxiety. And I actually recommend if you feel like you're drowning, you feel like you're not functioning, put some floaters on, go speak to somebody. Maybe medication is the right thing for you. And then along the way, figure out what works for you, right? For some people, it might be acupuncture, it could be massages, it could be exercising, it could be a special diet, it could be a lot of things. It really depends on how intense the anxiety is. Is it short term? Is it long term? And, it's part of like the process of figuring it all out. So there are ways to counterbalance and deal with the side effects, specifically that intimacy one, and you're free to reach out and we could discuss that privately. So kind of coming back full circle. So anxiety is really being in a heightened state of arousal long term that can really cause damage because your body can't handle that on a constant basis, right? So, a heightened state of arousal, for example, you have a flight tomorrow, you don't make sure that you don't lose it. That's good. It's going to make sure that your sleep is not so deep so that you're able to wake up in time. But if your sleep is never deep and you're always in the state of something may come, something may happen, I have to be super, super alert, that can really damage your ability to function normally. And what medication does for the most part is it kind of lowers this arousal, which is why the two main side effects, sleepiness as well as issues with intimacy, are all about lowering the arousal. So it kind of, makes sense. My advice when you're revealing anything of this, like I mentioned, I have a whole episode on medication and how to reveal it. I recommend, you kind of go to that, is first of all, make sure that you practice it so that you don't sound worse, than it is. And the other thing is to remember that the focus and the goal of sharing this with somebody is to figure out if they can be the right partner for you. And this is something that I actually tell when I'm speaking to people and, somebody reveals it to them and they're asking me what kind of questions to ask. And I have a whole list of questions to lead to a discussion. But the goal of discussing this is to figure out, can I be the right partner for you? And when you look at it that way, it kind of helps with the conversation because you're not looking at it as like, oh my gosh, they're judging me. They think I'm a monster, that I'm horrible. They're going to break up with me because I'm damaged. But rather, you approach a conversation by saying, look, this is what I need, the support system that I need, the kind of partner that I need. Are you able to be that for me? And the person can think honestly and say, yes, I am, or no, I'm not. And it's not because something's wrong with you, but because they are not the right partner, the right person, or willing to take that on. Every person has a challenge in this world. And I hope that whatever your struggle is, you get the right help and that you find the right partner who's going to hold your hand and walk through every hurdle with you, sometimes jump through them together. I wish everyone hatzlacha. I hope that you found this episode informative. And as always, I look forward to speaking with you soon.